News and advice on medical care for your pet. Sometimes it's pretty clear when your dog or cat may need a visit to the vet. Maybe they're just not themselves, their appetite's gone, or they're lethargic. Other times it's hard to tell if it's time to take them in. And as medical treatments for pets become more advanced and they live longer, we have many more choices to make. That's a good thing, but it's not always easy. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll talk with two Maine veterinarians about the latest advances in the field of medicine. We'll explore new prescription diets for dogs and cats and learn about treatment options for pets with arthritis. We'll also find out more about the emerging field of veterinary hospice care and end-of-life care options as well. And as always, we'll answer your questions about animal health. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. You'll often hear people refer to pets as being members of the family, and as such, of course, worthy of every available resource. But medical bills and food costs for a cat, dog, or bird, or other animal can add up, and it's important to know what the best options are to keep your pet healthy. Today, we're going to hear from two veterinarians about the latest news from the world of animal care. With me in studio, Dr. Deirdre Fry. She's the owner of Vet at Your Door, a house call practice that serves cats and dogs in the greater Portland area in the comfort of their own home. And Dr. Ezra Steinberg is with us as well. He's with Maine Veterinary Medical Center. Drs. Fry and Steinberg, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And as always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about caring for your pet? The number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll be going to the phones a little earlier than usual today to fit in as many calls as we can. So give us a call now and get into the queue. The number, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Fry, let's start with you. What's new, I guess, in the world of veterinary medicine?
Sure. So I am a house call vet, which means I go to people's homes. So I do deal with a lot of older patients, specifically ones that may have trouble getting in the car and going to the vet. So I deal a lot with hospice care and end-of-life care. And there are a lot of exciting things going on with older patients, specifically dealing with arthritis. There's lots of new therapies, including new drugs available, as well as a little bit of herbal medicine, which is pretty exciting. This is medicine that's been around for thousands of years, and we're just now sort of trying to tap into that in dogs and cats, which is really exciting. We also offer acupuncture, which has really been amazing for a lot of our arthritic patients, as well as just diseased patients who really can benefit from the benefits of acupuncture.
So once upon a time, and I hate to go back to the old ages of when I was growing up, but the standard was, you know, your pet got old, and when they could no longer kind of go up the stairs, then they stayed downstairs. But at a certain point, I guess the conventional wisdom was, oh, it's not fair to keep them living this way, and so you put them down. And that was the extent, really, of it. But now, as you're pointing out, there are lots of options to help your pet live a better life in less pain.
Exactly. And we're all about creating the best quality of life we can for as long as possible. So we still ultimately often get to that point where the therapies that we try end up not working well enough, and we do have to make that difficult decision. But there are a lot of exciting therapies to really prolong animals' lives and give them good quality.
And we'll talk. I want to get back to hospice and end-of-life care as animals are living longer and better lives in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Ezra Steinberg, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the realm of surgery. Once upon a time again, neutering was pretty much the only surgery that I remember, or maybe some stitched wounds after a fight. But now animals are getting ACL repair, skin cancer repair.
Sure.
What's going on?
Yeah, so I would say that most exciting in my field of surgery And so I do soft tissue surgery and orthopedic surgery at our hospital. We also have neurosurgeons. I would say that technology and advancements in medications are the most fun. So surgeries that we're doing with minimally invasive equipment, so laparoscopy and arthroscopy and thoracoscopy, that's a very fun field for me as a surgeon and also excellent for a pet owner in terms of recovery and less morbidity, so less pain. Advanced imaging, so we have a CAT scan and an MRI, and just the quality of the images that we're getting are so much better. So Keith, when you said when I was younger and our dog was just getting older and we figured he can't get up the stairs or can't get up anymore, I think we're getting better nowadays at figuring out why they can't get up the stairs or why they don't want to get up. And oftentimes it's a treatable issue. And of course, our pain management and all of that has gotten better. But I think we're getting better at diagnosticians at figuring out why this is going on. And maybe it's something as simple as they need a certain medication and they're back to being a puppy again. So the technology is great, and the advancements in medications and treatment options have just changed the game.
Chris, it creates a whole new area, though, of when you have this choice. Then there's guilt about, you know, spending money you might not be able to afford on a repair for a pet. It can be very difficult.
Couldn't agree more. But I think that if you're given options, and we'll sit down and talk about, you could do plan A, B, C, D, and just to have the information to process and actually have an option, I would hope makes it easier. And then once we decide on our treatment plan, we're not going to have any regrets. And just the knowledge is power, right? So knowing what is wrong with the dog, I think it's helpful rather than just saying, yep. I remember with my childhood dog when she was declining, we just kind of didn't know what was happening. And we just let it go on maybe a little bit too long. But once you know what's going on, it might be easier to make a decision.
And of course, your pet can't be signed up on your workplace health insurance.
That's debatable. So I think a lot of companies are now providing some help with pet insurance for our four-legged family members. Some of my patients have three legs, but but yeah, so veterinary insurance, and I think you had a comment on your Facebook page this morning, somebody asking to touch upon that. It's definitely a topic that is coming on the rise, and maybe some callers might have questions about insurance.
But so you can either purchase it on the open market, or as you're saying, some employers will offer
a group policy, or you can purchase it on the open market. And there's a bunch of insurance companies, and I'm not going to mention any of them, but it's really an amazing product that they're offering, taking that decision making process out and taking money out of the equation. Like any insurance, if you have it, it's great. And if you don't and you have a claim, well, you're in trouble.
Dr. Fry, so you talked earlier about end-of-life care and hospice care. And because you are you make house calls, that's part of the hospice care as well?
It is, yeah. So when animals are diagnosed with a condition or we diagnose an animal with a certain disease, there are oftentimes you have to bring them to the veterinarian and work closely with the veterinarian to really give them the best quality of life and best treatment plan possible. So hospice care is really trying to create empathy and a very safe, stress-free place for the animal when they're dealing with sort of the end of their life. And it's sort of been a taboo subject, I guess, in the past, and it's something we don't really like to talk about. But the more we talk about it, the better we can treat our feline and canine friends.
Pain management?
Exactly. So pain management, specifically, you know, medications, herbs, acupuncture, as well as, you know, just overall daily sort of check-ins to make sure that the animal is in a good, you know, has a good state and is in a good state.
So. And it's hard in all of these cases because so many, you know, in the case of human medicine, you depend to some extent on your patient giving you feedback. You know,
right.
Where does it hurt? How do you feel? Scale of 1 to 10.
Yes.
In this case, it's harder to do.
It's harder. It's kind of like a pediatrician in a way. You know, the kids can't, the babies can't talk to you necessarily. But there are things, people know their animals very, very well. And so when they stop doing the things that they love to do, that's really an eye-opening thing. And that's part of what we do is really listen to the people and hear what they're seeing with their animals and try to fix and address those problems.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Maybe you have a question for our doctors here about your pet, as Green does. Green is in Hollowell today. Hi, Green. Welcome to the program. Green, are you there? Green has disappeared.
Hello?
Oh, yes. Hi, Green. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Sorry. I have a big, strong, healthy cat who is terrified of anything that looks like a veterinarian. He's an indoor-only cat. Other than a screen, you know, if another outdoor cat came up to the screen and they touched noses before they exploded, he's not, as far as I know, exposed to pathogens. So I'm wondering what is the need for vaccinations for him, and should he be examined, and
yes,
is it worthwhile?
Great question. So I do get this question a lot with people with indoor cats, you know, why do I need to have my animal vaccinated if they're indoor cats? And I do recommend specifically two vaccines. The first is rabies. So I can give you an example from my life. A bat just flew into my house the other day, which freaked me out. And I was the only rabies vaccinated one in the human vaccinated one. So I was the one who had to deal with it. But, you know, they can become exposed. Indoor cats can become exposed. And it is very rare, but it can happen. And it's uniformly fatal and transmissible to people and is pretty much uniformly fatal in people. So I do recommend a rabies vaccine for all animals, all pets. Also, it is, you know, it is by law as well. Distemper is another, feline distemper vaccine is another, specifically the upper respiratory viruses, the secretions from other cats. You might be around people with other cats. They can transfer through, you know, getting on a client's or a person's clothes and then you carrying it home to your cat that way by having exposure to the other person. So I do recommend those two vaccines, and wellness exams as well is really important just to kind of touch base and look at the cat and make sure there's nothing wrong that, again, we could kind of find and address and take care of to better their lives.
Any advice on the nervousness, getting the cat more comfortable about coming to the doctor?
Yes. So we deal – I was laughing kind of or giggling when you were talking because we have a lot of those clients of animals that have such a hard time getting into the vet and really hating veterinarians in general. So we have a lot of those kitties and we befriend them most times. And it's a really nice way to practice just to kind of bring the veterinarian to the cat. It helps a lot.
Green, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go to Mary in Waterville. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. I'm interested in hearing what you suggest for older dogs with joint pain and arthritis. You know, a protocol or combination of any kind of medications or herbal remedies or exercise or diet.
Sure.
Any ideas?
Yeah. So thanks for calling, Mary. So again, you know, we sort of arthritis is a big umbrella term for dogs with a multitude of problems. And so we'll give you advice kind of in a general sense. It's hard to say for your specific animal. But arthritis, many people say, my dog's having trouble getting up in the back end. It's arthritis. And it's really important to find out why they have arthritis because the treatment plan is going to be different depending on the underlying issue. So if a dog has arthritis because they have an ACL tear, we're going to say, well, you need to fix the ACL tear and stabilize the knee that is unstable. In general, if there is what's called osteoarthritis, which is degenerative joint disease, so you just can say that it's wear and tear on the joints, one of my main things that I'm going to target is the animal's weight. And more than 50% of dogs and cats in America are overweight. So that is first and foremost, the most important thing is get these animals down to a better weight because the more weight you have on the joints, the more stress it's going to take on your cartilage and the underlying bone. Then we have a list of medications that almost seems endless that we can use, such as anti-inflammatories, like we can take an ibuprofen or an over-the-counter non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. I do not recommend giving any of those to your dog. There are much safer formulas, and we're even coming up with safer and safer formulas that are not going to cause problems. They cause problems in people as well. So stay away from those over-the-counter anti-inflammatories and talk to your veterinarian. Then we have supplements. So we have what are called nutraceuticals, which are not regulated by the FDA, but there's a lot of work being done with supplements to help with pain and caused by arthritis. There's joint diets. There's prescription diets out now that are loaded with supplements that really help these animals in terms of arthritis. And then like Deirdre was talking about before, there's all these other alternative therapies, acupuncture and such, that we know helps our animals. So I hope that answered your question, Mary. Was there anything else more specific that
you... Well, is it breed specific? Do you think that, for instance, this is a collie, large collie. Is it common and something that you can say more apt to happen in certain breeds?
Yeah, I love that you said it was a collie, because collies are not a breed that we think of have bad hip dysplasia. They're not breeds that I think of as a surgeon that have ACL tears. So I'm going to look for some other cause for why this collie seems to be slowing down over time. And sure, I mean, eventually the dog, just like us, we're going to not want to get up and run around in our older years. But a collie, for instance, is not a breed that I'm going to think is a magnet for arthritis. If you told me you had a German Shepherd that's having arthritis in the back, sure, it's very possible that there's some hip dysplasia in there. Collie is not one that I'd go to. So you should. I would definitely have he or she evaluated by your veterinarian and see if we could figure out why you think that there's some arthritis going on.
And how do they do that diagnosis? Imaging?
So a very thorough physical exam oftentimes gets you more than halfway there. And then just regular routine radiographs, so x-rays that almost every veterinarian would be able to take. And then if you need some sort of advanced imaging, a CAT scan or an MRI, that's when you'd have to come to a place like ours. But, yeah, it's a pretty routine workup.
Sound good, Mary?
Great. Thanks
All right.
so much.
Thanks for calling.
A lot of what you're recommending is what would be recommended for treatment of humans with arthritis as well, except for maybe you wouldn't want to put your cat in the therapy pool for an hour.
Take that back.
Really?
Take that back. So, well, actually, I'm sorry. A cat, I don't know if we could call over to the hospital and see if Katie or Lee has ever put a cat in the pool. I don't think so. But,
but
we have an underwater treadmill that allows them to walk and burn energy while creating some buoyancy, so they're not putting their whole body weight on their leg. So if a dog jumps, they can put 5 times their body weight onto their leg.
Interesting.
So if we submerge them in water, and even the dogs that, you know, the owners will say they hate water, they never go in water, you train them and they eventually are trotting around in the pool, and it's really nice technique. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Great. When we come back, more of your calls. The number to join, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the law firm of Eaton Peabody's Financial Institutions Group, working to provide effective counsel to meet the demands of banking clients in New England.
After having gone down in recent years, New Orleans' murder rate is going back up. So far in 2017, 120 people have been killed or wounded in shootings.
You heard the shots?
Yes, ma'am.
You get accustomed to this. We hear it every single night.
I'm Audie Cornish. More on the unraveling of the city's homicide prevention strategy this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is seeking an experienced HR professional to lead all the aspects of our human resources function for our statewide public broadcasting organization. We're looking for an HR director who's passionate about the work and mission of public broadcasting and has deep experience in all aspects of employee and labor relations, benefit sourcing, performance management, and HR compliance. If you or someone you know has the experience and enthusiasm that would complement Maine Public's dynamic and talented workforce, there's more information and details on how to apply on our website, mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, news from the world of veterinary medicine and answers to your questions. With me in the studio, Dr. Ezra Steinberg. He's with Maine Veterinary Medical Center. And Dr. Deirdre Fry is owner of Vet at Your Door. We invite you to join the conversation. The number 800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Let's go to Ryan first in Portland. Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to call Dr. Steinberg. Fixed my cat's leg over this summer. My cat Bucket.
Yes,
he was a 14-year-old cat, and it was either amputation or go and do this crazy micro surgery. And we opted for the surgery, and now he's like a kitten. And he runs around like crazy, and I just want to say thank you.
That's so good to hear, and thanks so much for calling. Yeah, Bucket had a deranged knee, a very bad injury with a somewhat guarded prognosis. And this is the kind of thing that, yeah, years ago we just say take the leg off or something like that. But we have great dedicated owners who it wasn't easy for you. I know that. And you put the time in, and you got a cat that gets to keep his leg. That's so good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I did have a follow-up question about pain medication. So we see in a lot of cases in orthopedic surgeries, for example, pain medication that is given out afterwards. And it's of concern because it can be diverted, and we know stories of pet medication being diverted and used. How are veterinarians paying attention to this and being careful to doing their part to minimize the negative impact?
This is a very fresh topic on our minds. So there is a push to have veterinarians be involved in what's called the prescription monitoring program right now because of this fear of the abuse potential of medications that we send our dogs home on because some of them are controlled. So there's a lot of work being done in Augusta right now to figure out what our role is going to be. And I think important for that is like, are the drugs actually getting abused? And at what rate? And is our involvement going to do anything about that? Because we all know Maine has a serious problem with this. And if there's any way veterinarians can help out, we're going to try to get involved.
And so how would you might see an animal come back and it's still in pain. It's hard to know, but how do you keep an eye on that sort of thing?
Yeah,
it's a tough thing.
So what they would like for us to do is be involved in sort of figuring out the pet owner's medication history and see if they are on a list that includes somebody who's being watched by their physician.
Well, it's a whole new layer for
it's a very controversial subject. So I think we have a pretty good handle on prescription medications and controlled substances with our pets and just being able to evaluate. And then there are just so many medications that are not controlled with and do not have any abuse potential that would be our go-to, of course.
Sure. Let's go to Rick in Waldoboro. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I have a dog that's recently been diagnosed with multiple myeloma, and I'm wondering about the correlation between cancer in dogs and all the poisons that we put on our dogs to prevent tick infestation and flea infestations. And so I'd like to hear a discussion of that. And also, are there any particular products that you recommend that are effective, that are least likely to cause cancer? And I'll listen off there.
All right. Thank you, Rick. And, of course, this is, you know, as always, weighing the importance of the danger of ticks and fleas and medications as well. But to his first question, do you know of any correlation between cancer risks and some of the medicines used to treat flea and tick?
Yeah, there are lots of different medications that can be used for flea and ticks, and all of them that are prescribed by a veterinarian are extremely safe and held to a very high standard. Rigorous testing is done. It's overseen by the FDA. So they've done rigorous studies on these drugs and have basically have had to report every single side effect that occurs with these medications. And so as veterinarians, because we care deeply about our patients, we look through these side effects very closely. And I am not aware of any flea and tick medications that directly have been shown to cause cancer. Certainly, you know, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm very sorry to hear about your dog. But as far as, you know, do these medications that we prescribe cause cancer, I am not aware of any specifically that do. And I only recommend medications that I know are very safe for the animals that I prescribe them to.
How common is multiple myeloma in a dog?
It's not common. So, you know, it's difficult to know throughout your dog's life, you know, what they were exposed to, if it was something environmental or if it was just genetics, or it's just so hard to tell. And that's why cancer is so hard, is because we search and search, because we don't want to have to go through this again. We don't want to have, you know, another dog to have to go through this again. But unfortunately, it's really hard to find answers.
All right, let's go to Deer Isle and Candy. Hi, Candy. Welcome to the program.
Okay, thank you. Now, remember, I'm just getting on the ferry, so if I lose you, forgive me.
Okay.
Okay. My dog is 10 years old. I've had him for 6 years, and he never eats any can of dog food, and he only eats dry biscuits, which is his choice, and his teeth are yellow. Why is that? I mean, if you eat something but biscuits, his teeth should be nice and bright and white.
Yeah, so dogs' teeth do, you know, we don't tend to brush them every day because that can be a difficult process, although I do recommend brushing dogs' teeth. But food alone usually does not clean a dog's teeth. There certainly are tooth health diets out there or dental diets out there that kind of help with that. But overall, there is something usually that I have people or I recommend to either brush dogs' teeth if that is not feasible, then to consider the food diets or the dental diets to help get the tartar off the teeth. There are also other different things that can be done. There's also, you know, if a dog just genetically has the predisposition to develop that tartar, I recommend anesthesia and dental cleaning, scaling, and polishing, and that can really get them back to square one. Because when you're seeing tartar in the mouth, that really is an infection. So it really does need to be dealt with, because all that bacteria can really seed in all of their organs, like their heart, their kidneys, their liver. So it's really important to have good oral health in a dog, just like it is important for us.
And so yellow is not something you want to see even in most breeds.
Yeah. And by yellow, I'm assuming it's not just the color yellow, but rather kind of tartar buildup and not kind of the pearly white that you're used to seeing. Is that right, Candy?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
What toothpaste should I use for them then?
So there are dog toothpastes. Do not use your toothpaste because the fluoride and other stuff in there isn't great for their bellies, because they don't know how to spit out the toothpaste. So there is like chicken flavored toothpaste that you can buy at the store, for example.
Maybe I could use that for my daughter.
But yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Yum. So there's you can either get it at like a Petco or at your veterinarian usually has them as well.
But I have to ask, like, how do you brush a dog's teeth? It would seem to be a very tough.
It is. And it's even harder in cats.
But it can be done.
Yeah, it can be done. It's really just about training. So you start slow. You let them, you just give them the toothpaste itself. Oftentimes they think that's a nice treat. And even using your finger and just kind of wiping the toothpaste on their teeth is great. You can also just use a brush and not put any toothpaste, like a little toothbrush, and just kind of rub their gums with that. But ultimately, you want to kind of build up and just try to sort of get them used to you manhandling their mouth a little bit.
And I would say from personal experience that the limiting factor of brushing the dog's teeth is not the dog's unwillingness to let us brush their teeth. Mm-hmm. It's the owner's, speaking from personal experience, our compliance of brushing their teeth. My dogs would let me brush their teeth every day, and we get them cleaned, and then we say, all right, we're going to brush their teeth every day. And then a couple weeks goes by, I'm not going to lie, and we kind of forget. So the dog, they learn, and usually the dog likes the attention.
Yeah. All right, Candy, make the ferry.
Oh, I'm on the ferry.
Oh, okay. Okay, all right. Was that helpful?
Lose me.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
All right, thank you, Candy. Another tooth cleaning question from Eve. Hi, Eve.
Hi. Yeah, well, you basically answered my question, but I was wondering, actually, because cleaning teeth in dogs is so expensive, it's not something that we have done, I'm afraid. And I was wondering what you could do to preserve dental health apart from getting anesthesia and a cleaning. We just had to put down a pug that had no teeth left. Mm. I felt so bad.
Yeah, and it's really being diligent about, you know, trying to brush their teeth if you can. And you can get those diets as well, the dental diets. The anesthesia, it is pricey sometimes to get your animal's teeth done. But if you start early, if you know your animal has this problem, which you would figure out through the exams, the annual exams, then you can kind of start early. So once the tartar starts building up and you're really having trouble getting it off, then you just bring them to the vet. And it's a lot cheaper because teeth don't need to be removed. It's very kind of standard scale and polishing. And that's a lot cheaper than when we end up having to remove teeth, which is like pulling teeth. It takes a long time. So it gets expensive.
Are dental costs included in pet insurance?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. So there are different types of insurance policies, just like for us. So there are wellness policies. Something that I normally push people or recommend people to get is these more like disaster policies that if something major happens, you're covered. So the routine stuff, hopefully, if you can just put a little bit of money aside, you can usually budget and take care of that yourself. But like Deirdre just said, the extractions, that's where all the money comes in. And a lot of these policies will cover that. So if you plan on every year, every couple years, getting just the routine cleaning, and you have an insurance policy on top of that, that'll cover these unexpected extractions or if there's an abscess that forms or your dog chews on a rock and breaks his teeth and needs it removed, that will be covered.
How much is a routine cleaning? Just curious.
It varies by hospital, but it's anywhere from about $200 to $400 depending on the hospital and kind of the technology that they have. It really is amazing technology there as well with dental x-rays. It's really amazing.
All right. Let's go to Tom in East Dixfield. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I've had a series of labs, a big male yellow lab, since about the late 80s. And the one I had before this one here was a beautiful 100-pounder, but he came down with a really strange cough called stridor and eventually was diagnosed with laryngeal paralysis. It was the most heartbreaking thing I've ever gone through with a dog because – just watching him pass out every day and look at me with those great big brown eyes saying, help me, and then going unconscious and coming back again was heartbreaking. I had an operation done that cost me a little over $1,000 to have a turret cut in one side. And it worked for a while, but that grew back and he started doing it again. So finally I had to have him put down. Mm. But I guess it was the most traumatic thing I've ever been through and the dog has ever been through in my life.
You know, yeah. I'm sorry, Tom. I know that's a terrible disease. I myself have two yellow labs, and they are the poster child for laryngeal paralysis. I did a surgery yesterday for laryngeal paralysis on a 100-pound yellow lab, and I know it's a scary, scary thing. Deirdre and I went to school together and had a physiology professor that I'll never forget. So he used to say, no breathe, no live. And, you know, the airway is the most important system for life and people and in dogs. And when you watch your dog have trouble breathing, it is very, very scary. So, yeah, there are surgical procedures that have the one that I do has a pretty good outcome. And it's a lifesaver for sure. But like any procedure, there can be complications. And when you have a complication on your own dog, it can be devastating.
And this is common in labs? Are
yeah, it's common. I mean, it's just labs, yeah. older labs, and it's this whole, as we've learned in recent times, it's this whole neuromuscular process that's going on throughout the whole body, and it just manifests its way, and the first place it's going to the owner's going to notice is in the larynx, and it prevents them from being able to inhale air.
So the surgery treats that symptom and keeps them alive, but doesn't stop the progression of the...
Spoken like a veterinarian. Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly right. So it's a sort of Band-Aid solution. It's a treatment and not a cure.
Yeah, I see. Okay, good. We're going to take another break. We want to take more calls from you. The number is 800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Lamy Wellahan Shoes, helping people in Maine communities through their shoe donation program, gathering and distributing over 10,000 pairs of shoes to Mainers in need. And Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
On the next Fresh Air, comic writer and director Neil Brennan. He co-created and co-wrote the sketch comedy series Chappelle Show, and co-wrote a sketch for the night Dave Chappelle hosted Saturday Night Live just after Trump was elected. Brennan also directed episodes of Inside Amy Schumer. He has a Netflix comedy special that includes personal stories about depression and family. Join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio. Coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio, we'll have Ideas from the CBC. Today's topic is Decoding Death, the Science and Significance of Near-Death Experiences. That's Ideas from the CBC, coming up at the top of the hour at 2 o'clock, right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your pet care questions. With me in studio, Dr. Ezra Steinberg. He's with Maine Veterinary Medical Center. And Dr. Deirdre Fry is the owner of Vet at Your Door, a house call veterinary practice that serves cats and dogs in the greater Portland area in the comfort of their own home. Join the conversation. Give us a call. The number 800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Sam in Freeport. Hi, Sam.
Hi. I'm calling regarding my two dogs, actually. Both I've noticed recently have been scratching their stomachs a lot. There's no sign of fleas or any other kind of noticeable irritant. And then I also noticed on one of my dogs, kind of the edge of his ear has like almost white, crusty, dry skin. I didn't know if that was something that I could just treat homeopathically or I needed to see the vet for.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to tell just because I haven't taken a look at the dog, or your dogs. But when we see cases like this, oftentimes it is due to an allergy. So you mentioned fleas, and that is definitely one of the things that can cause severe allergies in dogs, and we can see them any time of year. But
can I just follow up on that? It might be counterintuitive to think that fleas could start happening in early February. Mm-hmm. How does that happen? Is it because of the life cycle of the flea?
It is. So it's really the eggs of the fleas that we're worried about as far as kind of having an infestation. And so fleas can come in your house really any time of year, but mostly in the warmer months. But they lay a ton of eggs. And so those eggs can basically become adults at any time. So you can, you know, vacuum your rug and that sort of motion will end up making the egg hatch and you'll have fleas. So it really is a year-round problem, which is why I recommend year-round flea and tick products. But getting back to your question, Sam, I do see, you know, allergies a fair amount, and it is manifested oftentimes through the skin. So fleas is one thing, but it can also be something environmental as well as something that is food-related as well. So really taking a look and seeing what the redness looks like is very helpful, as well as ear infections can often go along with skin stuff. So perhaps if your dogs are scratching their ears, they might have an ear infection. So I would recommend having your dog seen by a vet just to kind of take a look and see what the deal is, if it does look allergy related or if it could be some other type of thing.
Ear that does have that like crustiness along the edge. He did have an ear infection about a month ago in there,
yeah.
But there's no gunk or, you know, interior signs of an ear infection anymore, but it is just, I like, it feels a little bit thicker than his other ear, so it might be swollen, and it's definitely irritated, like I said, around the edge.
Got it. Yeah, and sometimes just looking at the ear, look, the canal looks fine, but looking deeper, which is what a veterinarian would do, you can see signs of infection. So it's important to kind of take a really good look with an otoscope and look down there. And take
all right, Sam, good luck. So I have our family cat, Nene, also has some some disappearing fur around the base of her tail, and is that probably a similar slate of possibilities there?
Yep,
fleas.
And fleas, yeah. So we say flea allergy is often ears and rears. So see a lot of scabs and stuff or loss of hair at the ears and at the rear area, oftentimes it's fleas. Not always, but often.
All right. Let's go to Isabella in Southwest Harbor. Hi, Isabella.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I have a 15-year-old Sheltie who has started to experience some kind of agitation and anxiety at night. And I've tried to ask a couple of vets about it, but pretty much everybody just says, well, he's old. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts about the cause and what I could do to help him.
Hey, Isabella, thanks for calling. So 15 years young, we're going to say 15-year young, not 15-year-old Sheltie, that's up there in age. But we as veterinarians say that age is not a disease. So nobody dies of old age. That doesn't really happen. There's other things that come along with age. So anxiety at night, that's a difficult one. Is it he or she? What's your dog's name?
He, Sammy.
Sammy. If Sammy at night is feeling agitated, sometimes it could be pain. So if he's uncomfortable and just can't settle down, then that's one thing. So a good physical exam is probably going to be able to elicit some sort of pain. There is also something called cognitive dysfunction in dogs, and that's sort of like senility. So as a dog ages, sometimes they can get a little senile and be confused at times. And there are different medical treatments. We briefly brought up prescription diets, but there's some new companies coming out with some new prescription diets for cognitive dysfunction as well as anticonvulsant therapy. So
you try diet before you sent home a medication?
I would think of a diet as a medication nowadays. So these are now prescription diets that we're going to treat like medications, and the compliance on those is great because you have to feed your dog. So if you can get the meds into the diet, that will often be beneficial. And then Isabella, there's other things that, if we do think that it is brain related, we think that it's a confusion of some sort. And I don't want to go diagnosing your dog with anything over the phone, but then you might look towards advanced imaging, looking in the brain with an MRI or just a very routine blood work panel just to make sure that there's no metabolic cause. But that's a tough one. Anxiety at night's tough. But I think, as I said, just a physical exam, just checking for any sort of pain, and then starting on the diagnostic trail.
All right. Isabella, best of luck. To Paul in Owl's Head. Are you in Owl's Head, Paul?
Owl's Head, yes.
Yes. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my questions. I have three Jack Russell Terriers. They're all related. But the oldest one is heading towards 17, which is really pretty old for a Jack Russell Terrier. But for the last 3 or 4 years, his eyesight is just gone. He's got white cataracts. I was wondering what would cause that and what could have been a cure, where I also have two of his children and don't want them to suffer the same fate that I can have it.
Yeah, so thanks for calling, Paul. Cataracts in dogs can definitely be caused by some sort of metabolic issue such as diabetes, but assuming that the 17-year young Jack Russell has been to the vet and has had routine workup and monitoring, cataracts are something that even can be surgical. So an ophthalmologist can repair cataracts just like in people and let a dog see again.
And they can recover from that okay? I always think of it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So we always check basic monitoring, basic workup first with blood work, make sure that they're safe for anesthesia, listen to their heart and lungs. But beyond that, they do quite well.
And I always think of the cone on every surgery, but is the cone?
Everybody's more than the the estimate that they're given more than the activity restriction. Nobody likes putting a cone on their own dog.
It's got to be done in some
cases. The cone of shame is what people say.
Yeah. Paul, thanks very much. I'm going to try to work in a few other calls here. Let's go to Reedfield and Jill. Hi, Jill.
Oh, hello. Yes, I have a question about our seven-year-old Shih Tzu. She's progressively gotten kind of more anxious regarding eating. We've changed her diet. We're trying to find a food that she's more excited about. But she'll kind of stand in front of the dish and just sort of shake. And, you know, eventually she'll dig in. But usually we even have to put the food on the ground. I don't know if with older dogs, do they just get more picky, or do you think there's like anxiety or something going on?
I'll take this one. So it sounds like your dog is really becoming progressively sort of anxious, or seems to be more picky as she's get. Is it she or he?
She.
Is getting older. So that can sometimes be an indicator of pain or sort of association with not feeling well after eating. So sometimes I do recommend doing a workup. So just getting some blood work, some baseline blood work to make sure everything looks okay as far as, you know, their metabolic health and that's not a cause, you know, that might make them feel nauseous and sort of associate that with food. Sometimes you said that you did change their food around, so that's helpful. But generally I would expect, you know, I don't expect animals to get more picky. I think it's usually something sort of underlying that is going on that's making them feel nauseous and just not want to eat. So I would probably recommend, you know, going to your veterinarian and getting a little bit of a workup done just to make sure we're not missing anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, Jill. Thank you. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to Peter in Camden. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I have a three-year-old dog that came from a shelter who's like a Basset Terrier mix. And he does his business and everything, but he's tended to pee in a corner when he's left alone in one particular place. And I was wondering if that's due to anxiety and what could be done.
It could be due to anxiety, certainly, and it's difficult to know because obviously I haven't seen your dog, but, you know, it could very well be due to anxiety. Sometimes dogs especially and cats are very sort of picky about where they go pee or kind of what environment they want to go pee in. There could be some fear of being outside. We don't know necessarily what his background is since you got him at a shelter. It could be that he was in a cage for a lot of the time at the shelter, so he just got used to peeing inside. So really breaking him of that is important, and potentially using, you know, maybe a crate at first while you're sort of introduced. I don't know. How long have you had him for?
A couple of years.
Oh, okay.
And he's usually pretty good. It's just kind of when he's left alone that
got it.
When that happens. So
okay.
Is he making a statement?
So he could be anxious because you're gone. So some dogs can get a separation anxiety and they sort of manifest it that way. It's not that they're mad at you that you left or anything like that, which people sometimes think. But it could be that they're just nervous that you've left. And so there are things that can be done to make them less anxious when you leave. So giving them something to do, like giving them a Kong full of peanut butter, you know, so they can kind of focus on that and not be upset that you left, or potentially using some pheromones, which sort of mimics the mother giving off pheromones to her nursing babies. They have collars that sort of do that, or kind of a la Glade plugins that you can kind of plug into your wall to give them a nice feeling when they're at home. But it's difficult to know exactly, you know, what's going on, but it sounds like there could be some anxiety there. And there are things that you can do to help with that.
All right, Peter, best of luck. From Facebook, Marlene writes, can you discuss euthanasia with pre-sedation versus non-sedation? The latter resulted in a terrible experience. The dog did not die right away. Her experience, she says, has been with pre-sedation. Let's see. I'm trying to shorten it here a little bit. Why would a vet opt for the non-sedation option? How can we, as pet owners, ensure that this is the process our vets will use? Can you explain that option?
Sure. Yeah, I'm so sorry you had a bad experience with euthanasia. It's definitely not the way, you know, ideally we want to have our animals leave this earth. So veterinarians are all different, and that's what's amazing about medicine is that, you know, we all do different things, and it's not right or wrong. It's just sort of a matter of preference. And I personally do sedate my euthanasias, you know, my patients that are being euthanized, because I do feel like it's just a nice way to kind of get them sedate before you start kind of trying to find their veins, because usually with the sedation, it's just an intramuscular injection and they basically go to sleep and then you find a vein to give the euthanasia solution. So I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with giving the euthanasia solution directly. And I used to do that actually and had, you know, it was a fine experience. It's just over time I have kind of felt like it's a little bit better for the owner.
Because that's the phrase we use. We call it putting them to sleep.
Yep.
So I think mm-hmm. we assume that it's a easy experience.
Right, right. And usually the vast majority of the time it is. But it's like that, you know, if you do have a bad, I guess, experience, it can really be disheartening. So if you have a preference, I would definitely tell your veterinarian. We're very open to doing what you prefer. So certainly I'm sorry that happened to you, but you shouldn't feel bashful next time that you know, if you do get another dog or cat and have to make that decision to tell them your preference.
Mm. We're out of time, but I really appreciate you both being here, Drs. Fry and Steinberg. Thanks very much.
Thanks so
Thank
much.
You. It was fun.
Deirdre Fry is the owner of Vet at Your Door, a house call veterinary practice that serves cats and dogs in the greater Portland area in the comfort of their home. Ezra Steinberg is with the Maine Veterinary Medical Center. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join host Jennifer Rooks for a preview of this Sunday's Academy Awards. Jennifer and her guests will talk about the movies that are generating the most buzz and the movies that have been overlooked. We also have an Oscar ballot posted on the Maine Calling Facebook page and website in case you'd like to try and predict the winner. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.